97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
And welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker filling in. I'm a big fan of Newsbusters. I think they do fantastic homework when it comes to analyzing the way the media portrays certain topics. A lot of times you'll find that they'll watch endless hours of newscasts and they'll say, isn't that strange that they're only covering this for 8 seconds among all the major networks, but they'll go 20 minutes on something that you would look at and say, wait, you're only doing that because you hate Donald Trump. And over and over and over again, you get to see these type of editorial decisions that are made behind the scenes, and it gives you a glimpse into the decision-making and why they make these decisions, which makes you question why they're covering things to begin with. Joining us now is Senior Research Analyst for the Media Research Center's Newsbusters, Bill D'Agostino. Thank you for coming on to the show. We appreciate it. Hi, Bill. Are you there? Oh, I can kind of hear you. It's like I'm in the pocket right now. Oh, hi, Bill.
Yeah, am I coming through all right?
We got you now. How are you today, sir?
Okay, great. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, I know that you do a lot of different research, and one of the big topics that people are covering right now is the story out of New York and their nominee, Mamdani. What have you seen right now in the way that he is being covered and what they're deciding to cover on this?
Well, there have been a few instances where the networks, we focus specifically on broadcast networks for most of this coverage, or these coverage studies, by the way, like that's ABC, CBS, and NBC, because their evening newscasts get about 19 to 20 million viewers per night, which is makes them basically the most watched newscast in the country, more so than any cable show. But on those, we've seen a few instances where they're willing to describe him as left wing. But they won't go much beyond that. And they're focusing almost entirely on the economic aspect. They don't really feel comfortable talking about anything that would, you know, genuinely confuse or upset people about him. So in other words, we're seeing that they're largely trying to sanitize his platform. For example, the fact that he has espoused openly communist views, right? He's talked about seizing the means of production, his desire, his wish that one day we could abolish private property. I mean, that is communism, right? That's like, there's no splitting hairs there. The fact that he's talked about, for example, taxing whiter neighborhoods for being whiter neighborhoods, that's gotten zero coverage. They don't like discussing anything that would basically paint him as the sort of radical leftist that has taken over so much of the Democratic Party's base.
You know, I think about him as an individual and all the different controversies you read about where even those in the same party think, boy, I really don't want to stand next to this guy. And then they find some different politicians who have stood by him in the past and they're like, oh, they're doing their best to try to distance themselves from him.
Right.
I look at this as a news story. So let's put it this way. Why do you think New York City and the mayor of New York City for the most part, people think of it as a pretty liberal place to begin with. Does that play a factor, you think, sometimes in the decision-making process, which is, well, the people that are actually affected by this probably don't care as much?
It could. I think the fact that he is serving as a stand-in for the future of the Democratic Party, right? He's basically an AOC. He's this young, extremely left-wing, I would say, like socialist communist ideologue. And at a time when the Democratic Party has their back against a wall to try to placate their base, right? Their base is significantly further to the left and more extreme politically than most of the elected politicians are. They're finally reaching a point, I think, where a lot of strategists within the party are starting to say, okay, do we actually need to start meeting them on the left, right? Do we actually need to start careening leftward even more to meet our base there? Or are we just going to lose enthusiasm? And so this is kind of nerve wracking for the media, who are, of course, Democratic Party boosters, because they know that these ideas are not popular to a wider audience, right? They're not popular unless you're a, you know, 20-something vote blue no matter who kind of person. And so what they have to do, it falls to them to sanitize these candidates and these ideas, which basically means that they're trying to help the Democratic Party sell something extremely radical as though it were moderate.
Mm. Joining us here is Bill D'Agostino. He's senior research analyst for the Media Research Center's Newsbusters. And this is kind of adjacent, but I think about the Biden health cover-up and all the work you guys did looking at every time there was a story about this, it not being covered over and over and over and over again. Then all of a sudden, right. Joe Biden's out of office, and all of a sudden, everyone's talking about it because Jake Tapper, whoever, is going to put out a book. Is that any consolation prize to you that one day maybe you'll get a little vindication that these things should have been covered, or after it's too late, you're kind of bitter that it took them so long? How do you feel when things like this come out after the fact, when you were there screaming it for so long?
Well, there's never some grand I told you so moment where they come to you hat in hand and say, you were right, we were wrong, and we're sorry. That's just never something you can expect of the news media, because I think that to have the kind of job that, say, a CNN or MSNBC anchor has, you have to be borderline physically incapable of experiencing shame. So there's never going to be that kind of mea culpa, you guys were right, we were so wrong, we're sorry moment. I mean, like, look at Russiagate, right? I mean, I think that if you really cornered one of these people and forced them to answer for Russiagate, they'd probably just start denying what the allegations even were back then, what some of the things that the news media were saying back then, right? They would try to sanitize it. In other words, they would whitewash it. They would downplay it. And that's, frankly, that's kind of what Tapper's book is as well. Tapper's book is an effort for him and by proxy the entire media to run over to the side of Republicans and say, oh my gosh, wow, Biden is really old. I can't believe they lied to us about that.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm sorry, what do you mean they? Get back on your side. You're part of the they, buddy.
That's right.
So it's a bit thankless in that regard. But you learn to get appreciation just from being vindicated in the eyes of people who are actually paying attention, right? Because the media certainly won't give you the vindication, but the general public will.
I find it so fascinating just looking at what is the decision-making process, what they decide to spend their most time on versus the things they decide not to spend time on. It's very telling to me. But I want to go back to PBS and NPR, but in PBS in particular, what you find a lot of Democrats in Congress saying, oh, they're not even that one-sided. In fact, oh, they're not one-sided at all. I know you've been watching PBS and some of the coverage that they decide to use as part of their news coverage as well. What do you think about cutting their funding and part of it being that they're so one-sided? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, what do I think about the cutting of PBS and NPR? We have a half day tomorrow in celebration. I'll say that much. This has been a big goal of ours for a very long time. And if anybody is ever feeling squeamish about that, just swing over to Newsbusters and take a look at some of the clips that we've put together of NPR and PBS coverage, and just be thankful that your tax dollars aren't paying for that anymore. If they want to continue being borderline MSNBC but boring, they're perfectly free to do that without my money being garnished to without my salary being garnished to pay for it, right? That's basically the long and short of it.
Yeah, and I talked about this a little bit on the show yesterday, and I think one of the things I don't really hear people talking about mostly is that as a broadcaster and someone in the business, we've gone through many different instances where a lot of my colleagues and good people have lost their jobs because there's just not funding. The amount of money is just, there's not enough to go around. And I keep thinking, why should a competitor of ours, an NPR station, be getting government subsidies so people can continue to spout this left-wing garbage when the rest of the broadcast world have to make decisions and compromises based on what the audience they're trying to reach is trying to do. And I'm sure that the people that work there are highly compensated and they got more people than they need to. Now they're going to have to make a decision just like everyone else. And our competition shouldn't get a leg up by getting government funding, especially because they don't serve the public better than any of these other terrestrial radio stations do.
No, they absolutely don't. And in fact, that was a big sticking point of, or not sticking point, I guess, but like line of defense of theirs that we spent a decent amount of time tearing down, because they would routinely say, well, for example, we're needed for these emergency alerts, right? I mean, you know, like Americans need us to give out all of the emergency alerts. And we said, well, okay, how'd you do on the Texas flooding? And it turns out that their local NPR station took, I think it was, what did we find? Hours to get the alert out about it, like slower than local radio stations, in other words, by leaps and bounds, right? And I mean, any public broadcaster is required to send out those alerts, right? And those serve 96% of the country, right? 96% of the country has access to those through some means other than NPR. And the people who don't are rapidly getting access to things like Starlink. And generally, if you're in that 4%, you're also not getting access to PBS or NPR. So it's kind of, they are beyond redundant, right? I mean, yeah. Look, Elmo's safe. Right. He's privately owned now. Mr. Rogers is dead, unfortunately. Bob Ross as well. God rest his soul. And MSNBC already exists for the left wing stuff. And C-SPAN already exists as a sleep aid. So I really don't see what they are offering that somebody else isn't already.
And part of what we have been trained to do, at least as people that consume media, is that we support the people we want to support. There's Patreons for independent creators that are highly successful. They're able to do the things they want based on the support of their patrons. And same thing, if you want to support your local station, give them the money, get your tote bag, and be happy the programming is still going on. That model exists for them. Go ahead and solicit the local businesses that want to do the same. You can continue to operate just without taxpayer money. They can do it. So enough with this. We should have cut them off a long time ago. Real quick, if people wanted to see your work on Newsbusters or anywhere else, where can people go?
Yeah, come check us out at newsbusters.org. We update the site practically hourly. We're constantly putting on new stuff there. That's for our long form studies and for our day-to-day bias tracking. You can follow us at Newsbusters on Twitter as well. And of course, if you are so inclined, follow me at Twitter at @band_Bill, although I'm not banned anymore. Or I guess X, not Twitter, right?
Well, sure. But I say you're an organization worthy of people to be patrons of as well, because you guys do fantastic work. And I got to say, it's always good when I see an article. You do such a great job at breaking things down. Senior research analyst for the Media Research Center's Newsbusters, Bill D'Agostino. Thank you so much for coming on and joining us here in St. Louis.
Absolutely. Always good to talk. Have a good one.
You as well. And coming up after the break, Dr. Anthony Sun, an interventional cardiologist with Mercy Heart and Vascular. Announcement today that President Trump was diagnosed with a benign and common vein condition. We're going to talk about that. What is it? And what happens next? Coming up. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 971talk.com.